another episode of the Panic Pod, and today we're going to be talking about anxiety in driving, anxiety to do with getting in the car, going out onto the motorway, or the road, as you might call it if you're North American like me, and that anxiety about getting into other people's commutes and your own commute. My name is Ella Jean, and I'm with the therapist and author Josh Fletcher. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Yeah, driving anxiety, this is a good one. We're doing this episode in response to there's a fantastic woman called Fern Cotton, who is based in the UK. And if you're in the UK, you probably know who she is, and she does her own podcast and things like that. Maybe one day she'll invite me on, if she's lucky enough. But in general, she put on a fantastic post about not being on the motorway for 4 years, and she managed to go on for the first time, you know, using good exposure therapy. So we thought we'd do a nice bit of a short episode for, you know, if people want to learn about driving anxiety. If you don't have driving anxiety, tune in anyway, because there'll be some helpful tips, and the philosophy behind approaching driving anxiety is the same for a lot of other approaches to anxiety.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
I learned that last time because there was an episode on emetophobia, and I learned just some really valuable little nuggets of information were in that podcast from a topic that I didn't think that I was going to be able to relate to at all. So yeah, I'm understanding that more and more when we bring up these topics. I do drive, not in the UK, in Canada. And I think I'm with this person who, we also got a question on driving anxiety. And I'm with the people who say, like, does this ever go away? Is this something that I'm just always going to be anxious when I get on the road? And, my immediate thought to that was like, well, it's a good thing to be anxious. Driving is a very powerful position to be in. You know, you should be alert. Is it better to be anxious? But I haven't, and could understand that people also can have it to a level where it's debilitating. And that would be really difficult and extreme to the point where you're like, I'm always going to get a ride with someone else. I don't want to drive myself. Do you experience it, Josh? Have you ever experienced driving anxiety?
Absolutely. Yeah, mine started, I'd avoid motorways or the highway, if you are in America, or whatever the road is called in your respective country. I started avoiding that. And as we know, when you start avoiding stuff, your circle starts to get smaller and smaller. Then I'd avoid certain roads and roundabouts, then traffic. And then I just stick to normal roads, and then I stopped driving at night, and then it just got a bit silly, you know, all because it started because I was anxious on the motorway one day, and I felt like I had to pull over or leave at the next junction to calm down, which was nonsense. I could have stayed on that motorway all day. It was nothing to do with my anxiety, but that's what it feels like. Now, people with driving anxiety, much like people with other forms of anxiety, the vast majority of people with driving anxiety don't actually fear driving. They fear how anxiety will affect their driving. They fear losing control in relation to driving. So you get those famous what ifs, like, what if I panic and lose control? What if I have a panic attack behind the wheel? What if I panic and lash out and veer into oncoming traffic? What if I crash the car with my family members in, etc., etc.? It's very rarely I fear driving the vehicle. Obviously there are exceptions. So if you've been in a car accident, that's a natural fear to get back into the car again. If you struggle with PTSD and trauma in response to a car accident, then yeah, it will be driving that you're afraid of. But in general, as a general rule, it's mostly I'm afraid of how I'll feel, or I'm afraid I'll panic and lose control whilst driving. And that makes up the vast majority of driving anxiety. Now while you speak and I give your reflections, I'm going to think of some driving puns.
Yeah, that's what we need more of this, because it's a scary topic. I do have one incident of like what you're talking about, where I got really, really anxious behind the wheel. I think I've mentioned this in another podcast, where there was a moment when my partner and I were driving north to go to a family cabin, and I realized 2 hours later that I had left my wallet on the top of the car, and luckily I got everything back, but it was a really, really chaotic day, because my wallet, when I was filling up the tires, because you have to like take coins out and put them in the coin machine and fill your tires up, I, you know, had this massive like rush of adrenaline, massive like, oh my god, swearing, panic, and my partner like in the car being like, do you need to pull over, are you okay? And this isn't really anything to do with driving anxiety, but I do just remember that feeling of like, do I need to pull over right now? And then when you're, but because I was just going straight on a highway, like it wasn't like I was like looking around at directions or anything. I was just like, I know this is going to pass. I know this adrenaline flux is going to subside at some point. And I think even when we have little tiny incidents driving, like say someone cuts you off in traffic and it's like a close one, right? Like you could have hit them. And so there's like a flux of anxiety because you had your panic response kicked in, you slammed on the brakes or something. Like even in those situations, I think that sort of talking yourself out of it is really important, to sort of have your wise mind kick in just a few seconds after and go like, you just need to breathe. You just need to keep going. You just need to center yourself. You are safe. This isn't, nothing bad is going to happen here, and keep going. That's kind of all the experience I've had. I've been anxious behind the wheel on a separate, with a separate kind of thing. And also had those moments when, you know, you've messed up a little, and like it was a close call. You could have gotten an accident or something, or someone cuts you off, and then you kind of have to like power through and calm yourself down while you're driving, which is a weird sensation.
It's a weird sensation, but what you've described there is exactly the same as someone with disordered anxiety. Because driving anxiety is all, usually a form of disordered anxiety and agoraphobia or agoraphobia. It means that we have to place ourselves in this maelstrom of chaos and probability. But basically, I feel unsafe if I then feel further unsafe, i.e. if I get an anxious response. What you described when you realized, oh no, I've left my wallet in my car, and that rush of adrenaline, is exactly the same physiological response as someone with disordered anxiety going, oh my god, what if I have a panic attack? It's just the content of the thought is different, but the same, you're right, you get that same rush of adrenaline. Now people with disordered anxiety are afraid of that rush of adrenaline. They then add secondary fear. And I think we did a podcast on that ages ago, didn't we? First fear, secondary fear. They add that secondary fear to it. And suddenly that's where it starts to go around in circles while you're driving, and it takes longer for the anxious response to pass. But hey, the anxious response still passes. It's just an adrenaline rush. Now, I've worked with a lot of people, and it's all the same thing I hear every time with driving anxiety. It's, yeah, but my arms lock up. Like, it really is dangerous. I'm like, no, it's not. Have you ever crashed? No, but I almost did. But you didn't. Yeah, but yeah, my vision goes funny. Everything goes bright. I was like, yeah, it's a panic attack. But they can't hurt you. Yeah, but I almost lost control. I was like, did you? You know, how often do you turn on the news and say, see, oh, there was a car accident because someone had a panic attack? No one. In fact, anything, it makes you super hypervigilant, super aware of things around you. A lot of car accidents occur because of reckless driving or people who are overtired.
I was going to say, the only real threat is if your anxiety was so bad that you say, oh, I should calm myself down and take something else. Then that's really the only time when you might really, really get in trouble, because you say, it's better to take something that's going to make me relaxed.
Absolutely. I was going to pitch to you, Ella, like, what would you to say so to someone who you knew struggled with disordered anxiety? Perhaps they find driving uncomfortable anyway, and that's okay. A bit of me does. If I'm on a really busy motorway with five converging lanes and there's idiots driving around, I find that anxiety inducing. You know, I don't like that. But thankfully, it doesn't go into the realms of secondary anxiety anymore. You know, oh my God, what if I freak out and lose control? It used to. It doesn't anymore because of exposure therapy, really. Mm-hmm. But like, kind of as half an answer up front, what would you say, Ella, to someone who said, I'm afraid of driving. I've always driven all my life, but suddenly I've suddenly become afraid of driving.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to them?
Well, I think your advice in this situation has always been super helpful, which is that well of the wise mind that everybody has to draw on. It's just sometimes when they're drawing on their wise mind, it sounds like you, Josh, because they've listened to you say these things this podcast, which is like the fear of losing control is what's interfering here. The fear of the being anxious about being anxious is what's really happening. So if you're going to get anxious, feel anxious. Like if there's a moment when you, maybe it's when you first get into the car and you, that just the sensations of putting your seatbelt on and turning the car on, like that's when things first flare up for you, then your advice would be like, yeah, just feel it. Be mindful about it. Carry on, you know, do what you would always do. And you'll realize that that isn't what actually has power over you. What has power over you is the voice in your head that's saying, I'm going to lose control. Because that's actually stopping you from what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's sort of like if there was such thing as an anxious voice, I guess that's what it is. It's the voice that's saying, you're not strong enough to do this. You're too messed up to do this. You're too anxious. And it's kind of like, I feel like it's about making that voice just a little bit smaller. And sometimes there is a moment involved with turning to it and saying, thank you for your guidance. I know you're worried that something bad is going to happen, but I'm in control right now and it's not. So thank you. You can take a seat.
Yeah. In the back, preferably.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely, yeah. You described there beautifully the mixture of that inner critical voice and the threat response. So the threat response is, you know, wiling off. What if this? What if that? You know, all the catastrophes. Catastrophizing, you know, we've done an episode on that, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
All those what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
But then also you mentioned that, like, this bit of an inner critic saying they're like, oh, you're doing this, you're doing that. And it is about just doing it anyway. Like, oh, hi, yeah. I knew you were going to happen. Actually, what I'm practicing here is exposure.
Yeah.
So actually, I've gone to purposely sit in my car.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to purposely drive to places that scare me. Now, people with driving anxiety, they'll be not only scared of highways, motorways, and roads, they're scared of stopping in their car too. I'm scared to... I'm scared to sit in traffic. I'm scared to sit at the traffic lights. Now, I know why. It's because when you're in fifth gear and you've got the pumping adrenaline going around, it feels quite incongruous for you to be sat stationary in a car and like your heart's pounding and all that. And people don't like that. But they, for some reason, there's some comfort in, you know, the car moving at the speed that matches the momentum of our biochemistry. Like, but in general, whether it's driving on the highway or doing all that, exposure works. Now, obviously, you can do graded exposure. So if it scares you to drive to the supermarket, start driving at the supermarket, then increase it a little bit at a time. Then go on a dual carriageway is what we call in the UK, which someone, one of my American Instagram followers said to me the other day, was like, a carriageway, that's a very British name. I was like, it really is, isn't it? Yeah, a motorway. Oh, darling. And I was like, yeah, I never really thought of it like that because most motorways and carriageways in the UK suck, you know, but actually it does sound quite posh.
It does.
So whatever road it is that you're going on, try it a bit at a time. For me, I kind of just drove around in my car all day until I wasn't scared anymore. So I started off small, ended up on the motorway. But obviously, even when I was on the motorway or the highway, I didn't just pull on and start driving 100 miles an hour because that would be breaking the law, and I would never do that. But I joined using the hard shoulder, and then I coasted in the slow lane behind all the lorries for a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then once my brain was used to that, I was a bit braver and went into a different lane and passed all those lorries too. And then suddenly you're teaching that brain and that critic to turn off. And it always turns off and it's great. And now I don't even think about it anymore.
I was just going to ask, like, do you have a sort of inner dialogue monologue that happens? And did you sort of have that as you were driving? And do you remember, like, was there kind of a coaching your anxious response to be like, okay, I understand, you can quiet down now, we're driving, see, everything's okay? Like, was there anything internally kind of going on while you were doing that?
As little as possible, because the anxious response wants you to engage with it regardless.
Sure, yeah.
So it's just like, whatever, yeah, sit in the back, don't mind you there, but I'm up front, I get to control the dials, I'm playing smooth FM as loud as I can. I turn up the music, and sometimes, like, because it's not offering anything helpful, you know, these catastrophes. Oh, what if you faint behind the wheel? What if you collapse? Well, if you do, you're not going to know anything about it. But anxiety doesn't make you faint; it keeps you awake.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the whole point. But yeah, just, you got to remember, it's not the driving. I'm afraid to feel my fear, and this is where it applies to agoraphobia. It was where it applies to many things, many phobic behaviors, or like in the last episode with, one of the recent episodes with Kimberly Quinlan on emetophobia, you're not afraid of throwing up. You're afraid of how it'll make you feel. You're afraid of the fear associated with it. And it's the same with driving anxiety. So start off a bit small. If you avoid this, okay. What would your advice be, Ella, for people? And I'm so glad you said that at the start of the episode, for passengers who get anxious.
Oh, interesting. So passengers, okay, so like passengers who get anxious, and the driver's perfectly fine, you mean?
Yeah, the driver isn't like really drunk, doing 1,000 miles an hour. No. A perfectly competent driver driving the legal speed limit with no intoxicants in their body.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to refer to, because I've never really experienced this, but one of my favorite books is Presence by Amy Cuddy, who is a researcher who's probably most famous for being the one to invent the superhero pose before you're going into an interview or something like that, or like if you have to like give a pitch or something, and putting your arms up high. And she talks about how like body language before thought can sort of like change the way of thinking. And she got really into this research because she was in a car accident when she was, I believe, a teenager, maybe like early 20s or something like that. I think she was a teenager. And so for a long time, her body language when she got into a car, even if she felt perfectly like, she felt like the person was totally responsible who was driving, she would literally like pull her knees to her chest and curl up into a ball and have her seatbelt on, that, and that's the safest that she could feel in a passenger seat with someone. And even just a small thing for her, like putting down her legs, assuming a normal posture while someone else was driving, was a radical act of defying the anxious response. And like you say, like, I think it must be sort of something to do with reversing the thinking, telling your anxious response, you're the one that wants me to curl up into a ball because it makes me feel safer. So I'm going to do the opposite. And despite that putting alarm bells off, I'm not going to listen to it. And when you describe the sort of not listening to it, I think it's also sort of like having a kid or having a maybe really anxious dog in the backseat or something. And it's like, actually, by speaking with it and engaging with it, as opposed to just ignoring it, you're kind of still sending this message that like your anxiety creates a response or validates a response, versus if you just did nothing, there's nothing bad happening. So maybe I'm the one that needs to calm down. Maybe the person reassuring me, it's not about that kind of thing. Yeah,
absolutely. I love how you said about the shape. That's so, that's like almost like a micro avoidance, isn't it? Like if I just sit there and endure, brilliant.
Like a false comfort, really.
Brilliant advice. And I have had passenger anxiety too. Some of my friends, though, I mean, it's quite legitimate anxiety, you know, I was driving like an idiot. But in general, it'd just be, I'm not in control and I hate it. So here's some of the anxious behaviors I would do as a passenger. And this is what anxious passengers do. They'll watch the road and pretend they're driving, so they can't keep their eyes off the road. Well, that's a false comfort, isn't it? Like, doesn't matter if you're driving or not. I mean, I suppose you could argue, well, if there's a danger, I can tell the driver. But in general, no, that keeps you, it keeps you in the state of hypervigilance. If you're crawled over in a ball or tense or holding on to the side rail or holding on to the seat, white knuckling your way through it, then that's telling the anxious brain that it's not okay to be a passenger. So yeah, mm-hmm. go loose. But not only going loose as a passenger is helpful, but also go loose as a driver. Because everyone who's practicing exposure as the driver, the shoulders will be up near their ears, they'll be hunched forward, they'll be squeezing the wheel, the steering wheel, they'll be so tense. Keep reminding yourself to go loose. What would non-anxious me be doing right now? I'm going to try and ease myself into that. Obviously, you're not going to replicate it 100% because you are still anxious.
But that's such an important line. Whenever you say that, it just rings so true. What would non-anxious me do in this situation?
Yeah, would non-anxious you have the head out the window, gasping for breath, hyperventilating? No. Non-anxious you'd be like, you know what? That's okay. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to be anxious, but commit behavior-wise, even shape, posture-wise, you know, to what non-anxious you would be doing, because that's the quickest way to tell the brain that, hey, this isn't anxious. And I've worked a lot actually over the last year with people with driving anxiety, and they've it's always really nice. They once they've overcome it, it doesn't really come back. You know, they've done the hard work, they've sat there, whether it's sat in traffic or doing all these things, and they've used graded exposure and it's really kind of helped them. Some people have just done one session. It was great. Like one session, they were so sick of feeling trapped, they just jumped straight in their car and willfully tolerated all those symptoms, and it turned off, and they drove hundreds of miles away to a friend or a family member. But obviously, you do what works for you. For me, I had to do a bit of graded exposure a little bit at a time. But yeah, just ask yourself, what would non-anxious me be doing right now? So completely okay to be anxious. You're allowed to take it easy as well. Non-anxious, you might be a really confident driver. And anxious, you might not be. That's okay. Build up to that. That's just called being smart. You don't fancy driving around London, do you, Ella? I don't blame you. That's anxiety inducing in itself.
No passion for that. Although, you know, I was out for a walk today and I saw like three student drivers went by like in a row. And I think maybe just enough for me right now is to be like, I could if I wanted to. That's me getting rid of my anxious responses, going like, yeah, if it was really important. I did kind of have to face it. I almost had to rent a van to move my stuff from Manchester to London, and then luckily got a friend, bless him, who was able to drive for me. But that was definitely a facing my anxiety sort of moment where I was like, you know what, Ella, you have your international driver's license. If you have to do this, you could do this. And then I didn't have to, so that was great. I didn't have to drive around London, and I got to let a more experienced UK driver do all of the work, so that was good. But yeah, this is a really, really interesting one, because the feedback that the things people say when they're describing driving anxiety the most is like, I'm really upset about the toll this is taking on my life. Like, I feel so sort of inhibited by this thing that's happening. And I feel silly, you know, even people who say stuff like, I feel immature for not being able to do this. And I think that that's a really tough part of it as well. There's all of this kind of like self-shame that like builds on top of the anxiety when you're in that position, the sort of like, oh, this is such a silly thing to be thinking. And like, I think even just us saying, we had a lot of comments for this. Like there's a lot of people who have this. Everybody to an extent has felt anxious about driving at some point. And it's not a silly thing to be anxious about driving. Like I think any sort of thing that we do in life that has big consequences or you hold a lot of power, like that's going to be a place where anxiety comes up, and that's totally fine. It's totally understandable. And I think that the other thing to sort of add to this is that when you're compounding the anxiety of driving with the shame of telling people that you're anxious with driving, that's just going to make things even worse. And so if you can peel back a few layers and try to just remove that shame, maybe that's going to also involve like telling people that the reason that I haven't given you a ride in 3 weeks is actually because I'm really struggling with driving anxiety. That even just admitting that can like break away so much of the shame that's compounded with maybe you're making other excuses for the past little while. Like, oh, I won't drive you today because you never pay for gas. Oh, I don't want to drive you today because it's rush hour. And you might have been using other excuses because you don't want to say like, hey, this is just, it's made me really, really anxious. And now the more time that has gone by where I haven't driven, it's just compounded that anxiety. So as with any type of anxiety, because I'm also thinking about, you know, when you were just talking about this fear of becoming anxious is the thing that across phobias everybody will experience. It made me think about my social anxiety and how immediately when I thought about it, I thought about like the shame that comes along with like having it as a problem in the first place, like just how sad it makes me feel that, you know, I went to a therapist for this in my late teens, and there's still times where I'm worried about what people will think if I go to meet them. Like even just the other day, you know, obviously coming out of isolation and COVID, there's still a lot of there's relapses of social anxiety about. And I had to remind myself, I told my friend actually once I met up with her, but I was reminding myself as I was walking to hang out with her friend, like, Ella, just be yourself right now. Like, don't try to catch yourself if you're being inauthentic because you think that has to like make up for whatever's happening here. And I think just removing shame around an anxiety is also a really critical part of it. And I can totally imagine how someone with driving anxiety would be maybe making up other excuses for themselves or people that they're not driving because they're just afraid of admitting it.
Absolutely. I couldn't put that better myself. It's the compassion that you have towards it. And lots of people who are anxious, they'll I used to drive. I used to be able to drive around Europe and blah, blah, blah. But now I can't even drive to Asda.
The way they phrase that is so, you know, like they're like looking down on themselves. Like you can hear it within that statement, which is just so sad that they're already sort of feeling like, what's wrong with me? Like this is so wild that I'm feeling this way. And you just have to be like, this is something other people experience. This is fine.
Absolutely. I developed agoraphobia, driving anxiety, way after doing all the conventionally brave things, you know, flown around the world, done certain things, done your MySpace friendly stuff. I mean, just not my, you know, Facebook friendly stuff when I was, I've been into all sorts, done some daring things, but no, this occurred after all that. Now there's no way I was going to recover if I was going to sit there going, well, you've gone whitewater rafting in the Zambezi, but you can't even drive to Tesco. How's that going to help me get out of stuff? Mm-hmm. How on earth is that going to help me get out? You don't criticize yourself out of a threat response. If anything, it irritates that threat response that we talk about a lot on the podcast.
Absolutely, yeah.
And self-critical, you encourage yourself through it. So thank you, Ella, for highlighting that. Remember, exposure, compassion. Know what you're actually anxious about. You know, the content is the driving, but actually 9 times out of 10, it's I'm afraid that I'll lose control and have panic when I'm out of my safe zone. So it's actually kind of, it's more in line with agoraphobia, which we need to kind of look at. Okay, we'll draw that to a close there. There is some good news though. So for example, Untangle Your Anxiety is still a UK, US and Canadian bestseller. Really happy about that, but also some extra cool news as well. I started creating courses, exclusive courses for people so you can be part of a cohort. I think it's groups of 12, 16, whatever. And it's going to be courses about overcoming your anxiety. So you join your own specific group.
This is so cool.
I pop in once a week.
Amazing.
And also the course will be a video course. So it's me guiding you through anxiety and talking about what we talk about. But then you can do it alongside people as well. And then ask me once a week and fill in with your progress and whatever. It's more of an accessible thing to therapy. And it's going to be like, you know, one cost. So if you're interested in that, keep an eye out for those things. You can drop us an email or just keep an eye out for those courses, which I'm looking for. I'm going to start writing the content for. And also, I work with people one-to-one, but I get so many people each day wanting to work with me. So it's a nice way to kind of reach more people, but also encourages people to help each other and stuff as well. So keep an eye out for that. Also, we'd really appreciate Apple Podcast reviews. You know, show us some love there and then send us an email saying that you sent us a review, and we'll personally thank you. Those reviews really mean a lot to us, and it helps other people find the podcast. too. Thank you very much, Ella. And thank you always for your fantastic insights.
Thanks, Josh. I'm so excited to hear about these new cohorts. I think that's a really, really cool thing to be going into. That's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be so super cool.
I'm excited to keep an eye out for that. All right, I'll speak to you next time.
Okay, bye.